1. A most mysterious letter. A courier in a grey bowler hat and a frock coat approached a tall brick house on the outskirts of Montreal, Canada, unaware of the professionally trained eyes watching him from a bedroom window. He was measured, weighed, and classified in the space of a few heartbeats. 5 feet, 6 inches, Modo whispered. 140 pounds. 25 to 27 years old. He was alone in the room, and had reverted to his childhood habit of talking to himself. Slight limp indicates hip difficulty, perhaps from surviving poliomyelitis. Modo's years of espionage training made the measuring of the man an easy task. It would be even simpler to jump down from his second-story window and dispatch the courier with a blow or a sleeper hold. Now that'd make the man wet his britches. Modo carried out this surveillance to break the monotony of his day. He hadn't had an assignment for months now, and consequently his skills hadn't been tested by either Tharpa, his weapons trainer, or his master, Mr. Socrates. They continued to train Octavia, his fellow agent and friend. Every day she was in the courtyard, huffing and puffing, and practicing her martial arts, or shouting her way through her elocution lessons with Mrs. Finchley. But Modo was persona non grata, a forgotten and unwanted agent. I'm going to rot here. 3 months ago, he had twice disobeyed a direct order from his master to send innocent Australian natives into battle. Mr. Socrates had not forgiven him his trespasses. Modo threw himself back on his bed and opened his copy of Middlemarch. The arrival of the courier would likely be the most exciting thing to happen this week. Occasionally, to entertain himself, Modo would go through the painful process of shifting his deformed body and face into one of the many personas he had perfected, such as the knight, the doctor, and others. He would wander out to the market to practice his French, though the Quebecois spoke a different dialect than the Parisians. He did enjoy this little city in the Canadian wilderness with its French residents, Irish merchants, and British magistrates. It was like several small countries all rolled into one. But he always had to return to Montreal House and his life in limbo. He scratched at the little finger on his left hand. It often itched. The skin was fresh and pink now, but would shed every few weeks. He had lost the finger to an enemy sabre only 3 months ago, and it had, to his great and absolute surprise, regenerated itself. Proof that he was the oddest, strangest human being ever to have walked the earth. He tried not to think of the woman who had wielded that sabre, Miss Hackendottir, one of the leaders of the Clockwork Guild. The Guild was an organization bent on the destruction of everything British. The Permanent Association, his organization, had been formed to preserve Britannia. Modo had last seen Miss Hackendottir fleeing into the jungle. He hoped she'd ended up in the gullet of a particularly nasty crocodile. He imagined the beast spitting out her metal hand, and couldn't help chuckling. Alas, even if she were dead, someone else would rise to take her place. The Clockwork Guild was not a small organization, and it could strike anywhere in the world with ease. After all, it was most likely the Guild that had burned down Victor House, Mr. Socrates' home in England, forcing them to hide here. At least the Guild had left them alone for the last few months. He turned a page in his book and tried to disappear back into the town of Middlemarch. Would Dorothea ever marry Ladislaw? He was tempted to flip to the end, but stopped himself. He'd done that with Wuthering Heights, and regretted it still. There came a hard knock on his door, and before Modo could say, "Enter," or even reach for his netting mask to cover his monstrous face, Mr. Socrates was standing beside Modo's bed. His master had dark circles under his eyes, and his white hair was longer than usual. He looked as though he'd aged 10 years in the last few months. The stress of hiding from the Clockwork Guild was obviously keeping the poor man up all hours of the night. Since toddlerhood, Modo had been raised by Mr. Socrates. Or rather, trained, for Mr. Socrates had never been a parent. He'd bought the infant Modo from a travelling curiosity wagon. He'd never changed Modo's diapers or soothed his bruises. He'd given orders for the boy to be shaped from age one into a secret agent at Ravenscroft, a secluded country home. Modo didn't leave the house for 13 years. "May I help you?" Modo asked. Mr. Socrates extended his arm. At first, Mora thought he wanted to shake hands, then saw what he was carrying. "This most mysterious letter has arrived for you," Mr. Socrates said. Mora took the envelope, briefly touching his master's hand. How he wished, just once, that that hand had patted his shoulder or his head in a gesture of kindness. Mora cast aside these silly feelings and examined the letter. His name was written neatly along the front, and below that was the address of Montreal House. But how can this be addressed to me? No one is supposed to know that we're here. Not entirely true, Mr. Socrates answered. Since our great retreat from London, I've cut off the majority of communication with the other members of the Permanent Association, but I have left a few trusted channels open. So, Mora thought, the Permanent Association still operated. The secret organization had employed him for most of his life. Its one goal was to keep Britannia ruling forever. Six men, including Mr. Socrates, and one woman, had created and now controlled the association. Even Queen Victoria didn't know of its existence. His master jabbed a finger towards the letter. This was delivered to a trusted courier by a French contact. But what would the French want with me? Ah, that is the question of the hour. I'm here to discover the answer. Mora held the envelope up. It's already open. Of course it is, he replied, lowering himself into the chair across from Modo's bed. Several eyes have studied it along the way, but the letter is in a code that no one, including me, has been able to decipher. Open it, now. Mora pulled the single page out of the envelope and unfolded it to see 20-22-11-22. 33-23-28, 32-18-21-21, 12-15, 30-32-29-27, 29-20-30-15-11, 25-20, 16-11-7-24, 13-25-22-20, 21-13-11-30, 29, 30-18-15, 30-20-31-33-12, 31-20-21, 38-10-23-23-17-22. But it's just numbers, Mora said after scanning the first couple of rows. Without a key it will be impossible to crack. Have you tried the Visionaire cipher? Do you think I am a fool? That was the first code we applied. The day the French discover that we cracked their cipher will be a bad day for our intelligence gathering. No, whoever sent it has likely used a key that only you would be able to decipher. They would know that you are part of the Permanent Association and that other eyes would attempt to read the missive. Mora paused. Had he heard that right? You are part of the Permanent Association. Perhaps his exile was nearly over. Another knock at the door. An unusually busy morning. As was his habit, he drew his netting mask from the bedpost and pulled it over his face. He barely had his eye holes straight before Octavia entered in her exercise outfit, black pantaloons and a black sweater. Her sandy blonde hair was tied back, sweat still on her brow. "Please, Octavia," Mora exclaimed. "You really must wait for permission to enter."
"Oh, Mora,"
she waved away his protestations as if she were shooing flies. "Since when did we have such aristocratic stuffery between us?" He gritted his teeth. Yes, he had shown her his real face once, and he couldn't stand the guarded look she'd given him. Now he thought of the event as the "yours is not the face I've dreamt of all my life" incident. Sometimes she seemed entirely oblivious of his feelings. "I've heard that a letter arrived for you." "Where did you hear that?" Mr. Socrates said.
"Tharper told me."
Mr. Socrates raised two doubting eyebrows. He would not impart that sort of information.
"Well, then, I spied the delivery boy, and then, through the picture window, saw you climbing the stairs. You only go upstairs to lecture one of us, sir."
Perhaps I've trained you too well. Please have a seat." She chose the end of the bed, nearly plopping herself down on Mora's feet. Mora was searching for something clever to say when another person came through the door, Mrs. Finchley, in a long grey dress.
"Oh, is it an official meeting?" she asked. "Would you like tea?"
"That won't be necessary, Mrs. Finchley," Mr. Socrates said. "Please return to your duties."
"Actually, Mrs. Finchley," Modo said, "would you kindly telegram the gendarmes, or whatever it is they call their constables here? My room is becoming rather crowded with vagrants."
She gave him a smile on the way out the door.
"I shall send an urgent message." "Where's the letter from?"
Octavia asked.
"France," Modo replied. "But I don't know anyone in France." "There is that French spy."
Octavia brushed a hand through her hair.
"What was the little viper's name? Coquette? I mean, Colette Brunette."
"Impossible," Modo said.
The penmanship had neither a masculine nor feminine appearance, and it contained no flourishes, no hint of personality, as though the person had intended to mask any personal style. But the last two sets of numbers contained the same number of characters as the name Colette Brunette. He recognized that immediately. Her name had come to mind often recently, perhaps because of the French spoken in Quebec. If this was her name in code, it would be relatively easy to decipher the rest of the message. Each number likely corresponded to a letter in the alphabet. He just needed to know one of the words. Two would make it easy.
"Octavia is correct," Mr. Socrates said. "Use your faculties, Modo. I did not spend countless hours training you for nothing. Decipher the letter."
"Now?"
His heartbeat sped up.
"Nervousness?"
"No, something else.
Colette had written to him."
"To him?"
"Colette, who had fought alongside him on the submarine Ictinio. She had been brave and feisty, and, he could not lie to himself, bewitchingly beautiful. But when their battles were done, their enemy had been vanquished, and his defences were down, she had asked to see his face, his real face. They had been adrift at sea. They might never see land again. When he took off his makeshift mask, she had paled and turned away from the sight of him in disgust, and asked him to cover it. He had relived that moment far too many times. He was stronger now, but it would always hurt.
Translate, Mr. Socrates commanded.
Modo grabbed a pen and paper from his desk. If C equals 10, then O would be, he counted, 22. He wrote out the alphabet. A equals 8, B equals 9, etc.
It was Colette.
But when he went to decipher her last name, it was not Brunette, but Shvofu.
What could that mean?
Ah, it came to him. Every word had its own code. Instead of A equaling 8, it was 9 this time. He guessed correctly that the pattern repeated itself, and he was able to decipher the first word of the letter, 20, 22, 11, 22, Modo. He began to write it out, his brain calculating rapidly, his mind so focused on the task that he forgot the peering eyes of Mr. Socrates. He didn't even notice Octavia turning up the gas lamp. Soon the words were coming to him almost as quickly as if he were reading regular text. As he deciphered, he felt astonished.
Modo, you will be surprised to hear from me, but the situation warrants this communication. I have been well since we met, and I often think of you. Perhaps I could say it is an obsession. I cannot rid my memory of your face, and of my failure to match your inner strength. But my regrets should be of no great matter to you. The important thing is I have found your parents in France, though I do not know their exact location. You were born in the village of Nanterre, a short distance from Paris. I assume this information will be a revelation to you. I also have dire tidings. Your parents are in great danger, and I alone cannot protect them. Come to me. The moment you receive this missive, you must depart. I shall be in L'Hôtel Grand at noon every day for the next fortnight, or longer if necessary. I shall wait for you with eagerness. Your bonne chance friend, Colette Brunette.
Well, what does it say? Mr. Socrates asked. Tell us, Modo. Modo looked Mr. Socrates directly in the eyes. There was so much in these few sentences. Yet he surprised himself when he said simply,
"If these words are true, then I am French."
"You were born in France, yes," Mr. Socrates agreed gruffly.
I brought you back to England when you were no more than a year old. I rescued you from that cage in a travelling freak show."
Modo sat stunned. He had known about the cage, but had always assumed it was in England.
Any time he asked about his parents, Mr. Socrates had one reply, "That is not necessary information." Modo had long ago given up ever knowing. In one breath, he regained control of his emotions.
"Then I was born in Nanterre," Modo said.
"And if that one fact was correct, then the remainder of the letter was most likely also correct. Colette had somehow, for some reason, located his parents, and they were being pursued by enemies. There was far too much to consider. He felt as though the constellations in the heavens had suddenly begun spinning in several directions at once."
He took another calming breath.
"You're French," Octavia said, grinning. "That explains so much."
"It's no laughing matter," Modo retorted.
"You're British now," Mr. Socrates said. "If not by birth, then by education.
My parents are alive."
"I always assumed so," Mr. Socrates said defensively. "Remember, Modo, that they abandoned you. Enough of this piecemeal information. Read us the letter."
Modo sat up straighter and put his feet on the floor. He cleared his throat and read, struggling to keep his voice from cracking. When he was done, Octavia was the first to comment.
"I'm most curious about the Bonne Chance friendship. She was a shyster."
"She was not," Modo said.
"The question remains," Mr. Socrates said, "as to whether or not she actually wrote the letter. It may have been forged by another agent or agency."
Modo lowered the paper.
"But it sounds like her, the way she speaks."
"Cadence and personality can be mimicked," Mr. Socrates reminded him. "You of all people should know that. You make your living as a mimic."
"I like to consider myself more than just a mimic," he shot back. "Besides, she said, 'Bonne chance, friend.'"
"Is that what she called herself?" Mr. Socrates asked.
"Bonne chance is a common enough French expression."
"No, it's what she said to me before..."
"Before what?"
Octavia asked.
He remembered the event clearly. He and Colette had thought they were going to die in a metal pod many fathoms below the surface of the Atlantic.
"Before she kissed me, for good luck," he added quickly.
Mr. Socrates smiled, the wrinkles around his eyes becoming more pronounced. Then he let out a rattling laugh.
"You forgot to add that little detail to your report. It seems you have learned more about life than I was aware of."
"It was inconsequential," Modo insisted.
He glanced at Octavia. Her face was as serene as a doll's, but he thought he saw a glint of anger in her eyes. She had already known he had kissed Colette. He assumed she had long ago forgiven him. Or maybe he was imagining that glint. Was it wishful thinking on his part? Perhaps it didn't matter to her at all.
"So we have established a likelihood that it's this Colette Brunette who wrote the letter," Mr. Socrates said. "Why would she look for your parents?"
Modo shrugged.
"An obsession," she had said.
"About him. Consumed by her guilt, it seemed. Was she seeking his forgiveness for turning away from him?"
"The French government obviously knows that you exist, Modo," Mr. Socrates said. "She certainly would have told them. They could be seeking your family, perhaps in the hope that there are brothers or sisters who have your abilities.
Or, more likely, it's the Clockwork Guild who want my blood," Modo said.
He felt a chill. He had meant to say bloodline, but somehow blood rang more true. He had rarely ever thought of his mother and father. They were only formless shadows who had abandoned him, uncaring parents like those in so many of the fairy tales he'd read. In any case, he'd had Mr. Socrates and Mrs. Finchley to care for him. Despite that, now these two people were being pursued by the agents of an evil guild. He had seen what unspeakable things the Clockwork Guild had done to poor street children, to create a weapon to destroy England's Parliament buildings. If they did indeed find his parents, would they be any less cruel?
"Yes," Mr. Socrates said, breaking into Modo's thoughts. "The Guild could very well be in pursuit.
I hadn't properly considered the possibility of you having siblings. I'm sure I would have received reports. I paid a great sum of money for the information that brought you to me.
So you paid for me?
No, Mr. Socrates said. I paid for information that led to you. Then he paused. That isn't quite true. I did indeed purchase you from the owners of that freak show. Modo spoke slowly, deliberately, so as not to allow his voice to crack.
How much did you pay?
That's immaterial, Modo. If I hadn't paid for you, you'd still be in that caravan or in some cabinet of curiosities, or perhaps you'd be dead. Modo was light-headed. He felt behind him for the headboard, just to touch something solid. It was all too much to take in. A sibling, a brother as ugly as him, or perhaps not cursed by this affliction at all. A sister?
I know what you're thinking, Mr. Socrates said. You do?
Modo had no idea what he himself was thinking. You can't go to France, he said matter-of-factly. You're too valuable. I'll send orders to my agents there.
Valuable, Modo thought.
So the old man didn't hate him.
You have French agents?
Of course. It's a smaller organization, but the association can still infiltrate where it needs to.
I understand, sir, Modo said, even though he wasn't certain he believed him.
Mr. Socrates took the letter from Modo's hands, and, leaning heavily on his walking stick, made to leave the room. He turned in the doorway. We will discuss this further tomorrow. Octavia followed him wordlessly and seemed in a huff. Modo stared at the wall, unable to move.
French. He was French.